So Passover and the days of unleavened bread are now officially behind us. Not by much, of course, but they are officially history. You and I can't change anything about how we kept God's holy days, how we observe them. We can't change anything that may have happened to us in our lives during these days. Hopefully, it was a positive, uplifting, glorious experience for us all. For some of us, maybe it was your best spring holy days ever. Maybe it was your best holy days across the board ever. I hope that is the case. That's certainly what we strive for each time we rehearse God's plan. But what if it wasn't? What if it wasn't? It's the title of the first split today. What if you didn't have your best feast? What if you didn't have a good feast, even? What if the time came and it went and you didn't take the time to reflect and appreciate what it means to us, as we've heard often over the years? What if we didn't properly redeem the time? The time that God gave us through his holy days. Now, there are a number of reasons that this could be the case. Things just seem to happen around the holy days, don't they? There's no shortage of challenges, trials, and tribulations as we approach and keep God's commanded assemblies. Heard that from Mr. Patterson a little bit before, the holy days, and we all have our years that are like that. Satan is at work, like a roaring lion, doing everything he can to make things go wrong, and they do. So what if they did for you? What if work went wrong? What if someone dropped off the obligatory donuts at your desk and waited for you to eat them? Unprompted pizza party, you know it's that time of year, it always seems to happen. For me, the only thing that got dropped off at my desk this year was a couple packs of Sour Patch Kids. Now, was that chosen specifically for my personality? Maybe, but it's the only thing that I got this time, which was an easy year. But maybe real things at work happened. Maybe your boss didn't like you taking off this particular Friday. Maybe your job is now in jeopardy. Maybe particular circumstances or mandates, let's say for example, came back right before the holy days that call into question your ability to continue being employed and feeding your family. Maybe your family is fighting. Perhaps there are problems in your extended family with them getting along. Perhaps so much so that you guys won't be getting together for Mother's Day or Father's Day down the road due to the drama. Maybe your teenage sons are rebelling. Maybe your teenage daughters think that they're smarter than you are. To some out there in the webcast, maybe health prevented you from coming to fellowship with brethren during the last week or so. And it just didn't feel the same because of that. Maybe the day before the Passover, you're at work and your spouse calls you in a panic because lights just flickered and something loudly popped, but the breaker didn't trip, so you realize your house is now a sitting fire hazard. Nothing to worry about the day before Passover, right? Maybe during the days of unleavened bread, a line on your basement's toilet breaks and suddenly you're dealing with a problem downstairs. These are all, of course, completely theoretical situations. So where do we go from here? Some or all of these things may or may not happen to you. I know some of them did, some to me, some to others in the room. But how do we react? If we were faced with these circumstances, how did we react? How did we handle it? Did it distract us from what really mattered? Now, only you and God know what the answer is for each and every one of you personally. What can we do if we feel like we let another opportunity go to waste? Did these holy days go by us as another opportunity wasted? Then there's, of course, the possibility that it wasn't outside factors beyond our control. Maybe, if we're honest with ourselves, maybe it was you, or maybe it was me. Maybe we were lazy. Maybe we weren't focused. Maybe we just blew it, if we're really being honest. And that's not a good feeling to have after we've done that. I've had that in years past. I hope all of you had a wonderful experience. Definitely is a tiring time of year, especially those of us with kids, especially those of us with long drives as we go back and forth. But I truly hope everyone had a spectacular first season of the holy day cycle. But again, what if you didn't? What if it wasn't a good feast? How did that make you feel when you returned home last night? How did it feel this morning if you took the time for some reflection? And maybe it was outside circumstances causing part of that, but again, what if it was us? What if, again, we're being truly honest within ourselves, we're the reason that we might feel a little unfulfilled? If you're feeling a little underwhelmed by the whole thing, why is that? And we all have 43 days until the Feast of Pentecost, with counting our weeks, starting with the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, we're down to 43 days. Now this year, the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread happened to be on the first day. This is dangerous, I'm going on memory. I think it's Joshua 5 where we have an example of that, but that's why it is sooner than normal today. Pentecost is coming sooner than normal. Now, I hope that I'm speaking to no one in this room. I hope I'm wasting everyone's time. Everyone here had the best possible spring holy days they could have. Everyone maximized their spiritual growth as we put on righteousness all day, every day, thinking about God's character. And I hope that's true. But chances are, someone in this room, that's not the case. Chances are this topic is speaking directly to someone in this room. Maybe you just had a bad hour. Maybe it was a full day. Maybe day 5 of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was just rough for you. Maybe that day, which is one of God's days, feast days, you were just too busy to make time for God. Yeah, it was a Wednesday. You were busy. We just didn't make time for God that day. Maybe the whole week went south, and it wasn't the best week for our own personal growth. What then? Well, if you have any inkling of that feeling at all, how can we change that? Can we change that? So then we have 4 questions today, 4 questions to consider. What could I have done differently before, and what can I do differently in the future? What can I do differently next time to not feel that same way, potentially again? If you felt that way in any degree, what can you and I do differently before Pentecost comes? Got a little nervous when Mr. Willoughby said he had 4 points to leave us with yesterday. Thankfully, these are all different. 4 points, really 4 questions to ask ourselves as we reflect on the just past holy days. Number 1, did I put forth genuine effort into preparation? Did I put forth genuine effort into preparation? We'll start over in Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12, verse 24. Did I put forth genuine effort into preparation? Proverbs 12 and verse 24. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Now we are preparing to become kings and priests in God's kingdom. How did we approach the season? As the diligent or as the lazy man or woman? If we truly believe that developing character in our spiritual lives is the most important thing we have to do in this human training ground, which part of that verse applies to you? Which part applies to me? Just across the page, chapter 13 and verse 4. Chapter 13, verse 4. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. These are physical examples, of course. But how diligent were we in preparation? And not just the commanded mental preparation for the Passover. What about the little things that we can do to prepare? Preparing our offering in advance. Preparing food and clothing beforehand so we can focus on the holy day when it comes. Getting to church earlier for fellowship so we aren't flying in last second before the songs start. We'll turn back to Galatians chapter 6. read verses 9 and 10 here in Galatians 6. Galatians 6 and verse 9. "And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are in the household of faith." Now, this time of year, as much if not more than any other, we really should be focused outwardly in doing good for others, especially those of the household of faith. It takes thought and preparation to put ourselves in a position to be able to do that. These opportunities don't just happen by chance. Feast baskets don't just spontaneously combust themselves together. So folks in here, prepare for that and put them together. Now, were we able to take in all the services, all the messages, the increased time alone with God during the Holy Days as He expects us to do? Or did we just fly by the seat of our pants and kind of exist through the Holy Days? Number two, did I prioritize the spiritual over the physical? Did I prioritize the spiritual over the physical? It's really easy to kind of fall into the days of unleavened bread. Cleaning, 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 cleaning. Ah, we made it. Finally, Holy Days are here. Let's sleep for 3 days to recover from all the cleaning. Is that really what God intended? Heard recently about the preparation day, the one day designated to remove the leaven from the homes of God's people. One day of removing leaven, 7 days of putting on God's righteousness. The far more important part of taking in unleavened bread and putting on God's righteousness. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we all shouldn't clean our homes and belongings beforehand for more than one day, but if we're cleaning our homes vigorously for 8 weeks and then we sleep through the actual Holy Days, I think we're missing something. If we don't bring any leaven into our homes for 3 weeks before the actual days, for fear of desecrating the few rooms that you've checked off that list, and we end up making it a month of unleavened bread instead of the week that God commands, are we missing something? We'll turn back to John 6:22. Read a few verses here in John 6:22. "On the following day, when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there except the one which his disciples had entered, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone. However, other boats came from Tiberias near the place where they ate bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they also got into boats and came to Capernaum, seeking Jesus. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, 'Rabbi, when did you come here?' Jesus answered them and said, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him.' Then they said to him, 'What shall we do that we may work the works of God?' Jesus answered and said to them, 'This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent.' Therefore they said to him, 'What sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do?'" Of course, humanly, they wanted to see another physical sign. In the last day or so, he'd only just miraculously fed 5,000 people and walked on water. Many of them had seen that. Just like the Israelites long before them, they quickly forgot about everything they had seen, and they wanted more. Verse 31, "Our fathers ate the manna in the desert, as it is written, 'He gave them bread from heaven to eat.' And Jesus said to them, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world.' Then they said to him, 'Lord, give us this bread always.' And Jesus said to them, 'I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet do not believe. With all the knowledge that we've been taught over the years, we've been given, all the resources we currently have at our fingertips, are you and I more spiritually mature than we were a year ago, 5 years ago? Do we by nature prioritize spiritual over the physical? Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Are we growing and maturing spiritually over the physical? 1 Corinthians 3, we'll start in verse 1. And I, brethren, could not speak to you as to the spiritual people, but as to carnal, as to babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are not still able. For you are still carnal, for where there are envy, strife, and divisions among you, are you not carnal and behaving like mere men? For when one says, I am of Paul, and another says, I am of Apollos, are you not carnal? 1 Corinthians 3, verse 5, who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. Verse 9, for we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, you are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it. How are you and I building on it? Are we consistently building on it? Or did another year come and go, and we've just gone through the motions? Number 3, did I leave my comfort zone or serve? Number 3, did I leave my comfort zone or serve? There are seemingly a million jobs to do in God's work. And having our own church hall and conducting services and doing the work, whether we're giving someone a ride or giving a sermon, or the many, many things in between, were you and I looking for additional ways to serve through the holy days? Were we looking to leave our comfort zone and serve in additional new ways, or just coast through the motions? Galatians 5 and verse 13. If you'll turn over there. Fruits of the Spirit chapter, of course, but we'll read a passage just before that. Galatians 5 in verse 13. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Through love, serving one another. Do we let petty arguments, disputes, or other trivial matters prevent us from serving one another through love? Or again, is it easier just to stay in our own little lane where it's comfortable? Flip a couple pages back to Colossians 3, verse 23. Colossians 3, verse 23, we'll read 23 and 24. Colossians 3, verse 23. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Whoever we work for, We do it to the best of our ability because we're really working for God. When we're serving each other, we're serving the Lord Christ for his purpose. Whether it's a duty we've been asked to fulfill or just a need that you've seen and addressed on your own or something behind the scenes that most other people don't even see. Those are the things that God notices. Is just showing up to services enough? Is being a body in a chair enough? Showing up 5 minutes before, occupying a seat, leaving 10 minutes after, is that fulfilling our calling to serve? Turn back to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew 20 and verse 27. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, if we're to be emulating Christ, the perfect example, did you come to services during the holidays to serve? Did we have Christ's mind frame that we're here to serve? No doubt that you've heard many talk about the best experiences, their best experience at the feast over the years. Many times it's in those years when we have served in a particular way that we have the best years. The more we put in, the more we prepare beforehand to engage, to participate, the more we get back out of it. Again, my purpose today is for us to be honest with ourselves. If your holiday season felt a bit underwhelming for whatever reason, what part did we play in that? What part did you play in that? For me, what part did I play in that? If you didn't come to serve others, or you didn't come to leave your own personal comfort behind for the benefit of others, do you believe that might have been a factor in your experience? When we sow very little, what do we expect to reap? If you turn over to John 12, read verse 26 there, just one verse. John 12 and verse 26. If anyone serves me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. I think it's safe to say that everyone's goal here is to receive honor from God, to become part of his family. Are we showing God that in leaving our comfort zones and serving others? Number four, is God really first in my life? Fourth and final point for me, is God really first in my life? Day four of the feast last week. Tuesday. Most of us worked all day. Most of us fed our kids. Some of us got crazy and did both of those. Day four of God's Feast of Unleavened Bread. Also a working Tuesday. Was God the first thing on your mind, on my mind, when you woke up on the fourth day of his feast? When you woke up, was the feast on your mind? Or was coffee and your commute on your mind on Tuesday? I think you'll agree with me that it's much easier during the Feast of Tabernacles to stay focused during the second of God's two-day festivals, or two seven-day-long festivals, is what I'm trying to say. First thing we do is go to services, get spiritually fed, and then we enjoy the rest of the day as we're commanded. But this is a bigger challenge during the days of unleavened bread. We've got work, we've got school, we've got daily responsibilities, but it's still a seven-day festival of God. Was that consistently on our minds? Did you and I engage in day four of the feast? Or did we engage in Tuesday? Colossians 3. Here earlier, we'll read verses 1 to 4 from Colossians 3. Colossians 3 and verse 1, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Consistently setting our minds on the things that are above is a constant challenge for us, at least it is for me. Everything humanly around us is begging for our attention. It's often intentionally distracting us to keep our minds somewhere else than they should be, on the things that are down here, the things that are temporary, the things that are passing away. Did we consider that significantly each of these feast days? Or did these days get by us like any other days in April? Turn back to Matthew 6, verse 19. This is more flipping around than I realized when I put this together. Sorry. There's a couple of scriptures left. Matthew 6 and verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Super familiar verse to us all, of course, but where were our thoughts? Where our time was spent? We dwell on what we care about. Our hearts will be where what matters to us is. We can try to convince ourselves otherwise during the Sabbath sometimes, maybe during the holy days, but where we spend our time consistently on a day-in and day-out basis throughout the year shows us, and more importantly, shows God, where our treasure and where our hearts are. I'm responsible for my own accounting of the time I've been given, of course. What does my story tell God? What does yours? Does God clearly know from the way that we spend our time that we are all in with him? That we're heavily invested and dedicated to setting our minds on the things which are above? Luke chapter 14, verse 25. Luke chapter 14, we'll read a few verses here. Luke 14 and verse 25. Now great multitudes went with him, and he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest, after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going to make war with another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace." Finally, verse 33, "So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." Whoever does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. We've heard recently, I think it was here in Louisville, not a message I listened to at home, but I think we're all clear in what this passage means. It's we don't hate those around us in the name of being a Christian, but we must be willing to sacrifice anything and sometimes anyone that takes us away from or distracts us from God. God makes it very clear to us that he must be priority number one in our lives. Is God really first in my life? Is God really first in yours? I didn't mean any of this message to be a guilt trip. I've had years where I felt like I personally completely blew it and I wasted the time that was in front of me. Like many messages, this was an exercise for me that I just happened to share with you. I personally don't want to have those feelings again, like I described at the beginning. Now, if you can't relate to any of this, good on you, so to speak. But if you can, maybe these four questions can help you pick up, or help pick you up, as we head towards the second season of God's plan, as we count down towards Pentecost. So if you left feeling a little underwhelmed, can you truly ask yourself, did I put forth genuine effort in preparation? Did I prioritize the spiritual over the physical? Did I leave my comfort zone or serve? And is God really first in my life?